Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is August 19, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. And I'm not too sure whether I hit the recording or not. Let me see. Okay, I guess I did. Okay, we're going to pick up with scripture reading. This week we're going to be looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, read by Alexander Scorby. 1 Corinthians 15.
Chapter 15. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel which I preached unto you, which also ye have received, and wherein ye stand, by which also ye are saved, if ye keep in memory what I preached unto you, unless ye have believed in vain. For I delivered unto you first of all that which I also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen of Cephas, then of the 12. After that he was seen of above 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain unto this present, but some are fallen asleep. After that he was seen of James, then of all the apostles, and last of all he was seen of me also, as of one born out of due time. For I am the least of the apostles, that am not meet to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God I am what I am, and his grace which was bestowed upon me was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God which was with me. Therefore, whether it were I or they, so we preach, and so ye believed. Now, if Christ be preached that he rose from the dead, how say some among you that there is no resurrection of the dead? But if there be no resurrection of the dead, then is Christ not risen. And if Christ be not risen, then is our preaching vain, and your faith is also vain. Yea, and we are found false witnesses of God, because we have testified of God that he raised up Christ, whom he raised not up, if so be that the dead rise not. For if the dead rise not, then is not Christ raised. And if Christ be not raised, your faith is vain, ye are yet in your sins. Then they also which are fallen asleep in Christ are perished. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable. But now is Christ risen from the dead, and become the firstfruits of them that slept. For since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. But every man in his own order, Christ the firstfruits, afterward they that are Christ's at his coming. Then cometh the end, when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. For he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death, for he hath put all things under his feet. But when he saith, all things are put under him, it is manifest that he is accepted which did put all things under him. And when all things shall be subdued unto him, then shall the Son also himself be subject unto him that put all things under him, that God may be all in all. Else what shall they do which are baptized for the dead, if the dead rise not at all? Why are they then baptized for the dead? And why stand we in jeopardy every hour? I protest by your rejoicing which I have in Christ Jesus our Lord, I die daily. If after the manner of men I have fought with beasts at Ephesus, what advantageth it me if the dead rise not? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. But some man will say, how are the dead raised up, and with what body do they come? Thou fool, that which thou sowest is not quickened except it die, and that which thou sowest not that body that shall be, but bare grain. It may chance of wheat or of some other grain. But God giveth it a body as it hath pleased him, and to every seed his own body. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of beasts, another of fishes, and another of birds. There are also celestial bodies, and bodies terrestrial. But the glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differeth from another star in glory. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown in corruption. It is raised in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body, and there is a spiritual body. And so it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit. Howbeit, that was not first which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterward that which is spiritual. The first man is of the earth, earthy. The second man is the Lord from heaven. As is the earthy, such are they also that are earthy, and as is the heavenly, such are they also that are heavenly. And as we have borne the image of the earthy, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. Now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, forasmuch as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
We have an announcement, John. I received an email from one of our members that would like to share a few book titles and resources for listeners on subjects that are often discussed on the Monday Night Call. The first book is regarding the alloidal title. The book is titled, I Wants, with plural S on it, to Own My Land, from the AmericansBulletin.com. It's a book regarding, or also a book regarding the right to travel freely, which is entitled Travel by Right, No License, Driving Revealed, Volume 2. And again from the AmericansBulletin.com. And an excellent book on income tax titled Income Tax Shattering the Myths. And that's by Dave Champion, Ph.D., from drrealty.news/store. So if anybody's interested, you can send me an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and I can share the links with you. He also suggests that we should contact Dave Champion to see if he would like to come to the Monday night call or set up an interview with him to discuss many things in detail. He feels maybe NLA and its members, listeners, would be impressed, and I have the two links for contacting him. I have no questions tonight. I think that's the first time, maybe the second time in 10 years, where we haven't had any questions. So that's it, John.
All right, thank you. Excuse me. All right, well, I got an announcement or two, just a reminder. We'd like to remind everybody of the importance of joining our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Click on our sheriff. You can highlight our sheriffs and come right down one level and click on join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. And you can get information on how to do that here on this page. Let's see. Also, I put up a video on our front page. I found this pretty good. I don't think I'm going to play it. Let me just see how long this is. I'll click on it just for a moment. I got this off of SGNON site, and so I put a link here. It's pretty powerful. It's 4 minutes long, 5 minutes long, so people might want to listen to that, but I'm not going to play that tonight. Let's see what else I might have here. Okay, Colonel McGregor's site is scheduled to be launched in the next week or two. We're going to have access to prepare our presence on that new site starting tomorrow. So I'll be looking at that, and Jan, I'll probably talk to you shortly about that in the next day or two. I'm going to put some things together, and I'm going to see where we go. See if there's anything else I might want to bring up. Okay, I'm going to spend about 20 minutes looking in on a paper I'm putting together. I've spoke about this numerous times, and it basically is a presentment to the United States Supreme Court. I've given a lot of thought on this, on how to kind of get this to the United States Supreme Court. And I thought about trying to go through the process as if it was an action. And the more I think about that, that's not appropriate, because really it's a presentment and an indictment on the federal judiciary. And so we're going to send it directly to the United States Supreme Court. And so I'm going to read a little bit of this. It's way too long to go through all at one time, and I'm still not finished with it, really. And this gives me the opportunity to kind of read this out loud. I'll probably find some errors as I go along, and I'll make corrections as I go along tonight. I've read through this quite a few times, but whatever work you do, constantly you go through and you figure, oh, maybe I should have said it this way, or I could have said it better that way, and maybe I shouldn't have said this, maybe I should have added that, or some errors that just needs to be corrected from other perspectives. But I'm going to read it. It's very important because this is a finale. This is our final paper. The only other thing we're going to continue to file after this is affidavits. And we do have a page, let me just open that up real quickly, on affidavits for anybody that is has a problem in the courts. Okay, there's a couple of ways to get to it. I'll get to it on the right-hand side here, stuck in an abusive court. So this page I put together a few weeks ago. We've got lots of affidavits and lots of different papers that we've written for the court, which is also kind of attached to this paper. It's in the courts already, so we're not going to file it again in the courts, but we'll make reference to it maybe later on in the paperwork that I'm going to read. But we're also going to be adding all of the affidavits that people have written concerning their cases and their problems. We're going to be looking for restitution over a period of time, people who have lost their homes, people who have been jailed without due process, where they ignored habeas corpuses, and lots of other paperwork that we've put through. But anyway, if you're stuck in an abusive court, or in the middle of a court case, you might want to write an affidavit. Well, if you lose the court case, or you don't, you know, they throw you out, or whatever the case may be, or you, even if you haven't gone to court, if you have an issue that you've been injured, you're going to want to write an affidavit. You're going to want to follow the instructions very carefully here. Less is more when it comes to anything that you write. That's almost a contradiction to what I'm going to be reading tonight, but what I'm going to be looking at tonight is really the serious problems that are in the court, in our courts all over. It doesn't matter whether it's the court, federal courts, the state courts, or the county courts. All the other courts, they're just courts that don't even really concern us. They're statutory courts. They're for the purpose of commercial activities. Has nothing to do with us. They don't have any power or authority over we, the people, not without our consent. Unfortunately, a lot of people go into these courts and they give them consent by pleading, and they take their money from them, and you know how all that goes. But in any event, you know, the paper we're writing is, right now it's 107 pages. And again, it's covering a lot of information. It's laying out all of the problems within the court, point by point by point, and the things that's necessary to bring our courts back to courts of justice, not only in the federal courts, but in the state courts also, which would include the state court and the county courts. Bringing into a proper perspective the lower courts behind that, below that, for instance, the town courts, the village courts, and the city courts. But anyway, going back to this abusive thing here, examples of injuries. Let's see. Let me just read this. It'll only take a few seconds or a few minutes. Natural law requires that for every injury, there must be a remedy. If you have been injured by the courts, we, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, will restore you. Examples of injuries. And again, remember, this paper, I'm not sure exactly when we're going to file it. I'm kind of playing it by ear. When I see certain things at a certain, well, there's all kinds of things that could happen. At some point when I feel it's the time, I'm going to file it. I don't see this paper even be finished before the end of August, so August is out for sure. I think before it's actually perfected, it'll probably take us sometime into September, maybe even all the way through September. But let's say by mid to late September, the paper, I think, will be very close to be ready to be filed. And it will just be poised for the right timing in order to file this paper. That's kind of played by ear. We're not going to get the justice, we're not going to get really their attention or anything until we're really deep into devolution. So that's kind of the thing I'm looking for, where we are in devolution. As far as people getting restitution and things of that nature, it'll be after devolution, which will be sometime after, could be sometime after the election, or it could be sometime after the time when Trump retakes office again. And it's going to be very interesting to watch how all that's going to play out and how that'll work, because it is possible Trump may be able to take power right after the election. And there's many reasons for that possibility, and it may be a necessity. So we'll see what happens. So I'm not going to get to discuss that at the moment, but maybe we'll talk about that in the coming weeks. Examples of injuries, mortgage foreclosures, tax foreclosures on your home, denial of due process, unlawful imprisonment, denial of habeas corpus, denial of your right to travel, hijacked into family courts, hijacked into a probate court, denial of any other unalienable right. And it's not just the rights that are written up in the Bill of Rights. We have far, far more rights than that. We have a right it doesn't even talk. Well, I guess let me think about it. Yeah, we have a due process written up anyway in the Constitution. The right to travel isn't there, but we obviously we have a right to travel. We have a right to access our courts without cost, courts of justice. It shouldn't cost us anything to access our courts. The only people that should pay anything to access our courts would be fictions, in other words, corporations. It would be necessary for them to pay you know, some kind of a cost in order to enter the courts and have justice. But again, it's the justice courts that we have to really bring back, and we have to lay it out very specifically. In any event, just to finish off on anybody that wants to file an affidavit, you read this page of information. It'll tell you what to do. And there's an email in here where you email your affidavit, and it will be eventually sent up to the United States Supreme Court to go through the court system at some point in time to lay it out for the sole purpose of getting restitution to all injuries. It'll funnel down eventually probably through the state courts, but who knows, maybe not. These are interesting times, and you know, things don't run as normal. But let's take a look at this paper. Again, I'm only going to spend about 20 minutes on it. And then after that 20 minutes, you know, next week I'll spend another 20 minutes, and so on and so on. And again, this will help me not only to really kind of see whatever errors that need to be corrected and kind of have the opportunity to articulate it, which, you know, when you read something, you know, you can read something over and over again and not see the error. But when you add your voice to it and articulate it, pop, all of a sudden you start to see an error that you didn't see before. So I find it very helpful to read it out loud. But again, this is for educational purposes also. There's a huge education in this paper, because it's going to talk about rights. It's going to talk about courts of justice. It's going to talk about how a court of justice really has to really focus in on to become a court of justice. Okay, so this is the United States Common Law Grand Jury. By the way, Jan, if I'm when I hit about the 20-minute mark from reading this, maybe just let me know if I'm. I'll try to keep an eye on it myself. But I don't want to go too much longer than 20 minutes. Okay, so a grand jury presentment to the United States Supreme Court. This is a national emergency, an extraordinary presentment, and an extraordinary indictment upon the federal judiciary. The Supreme Court justices took an oath to guarantee a Republican form of government. We the people, I'm going to correct these errors as I go along, because again, like I say, it's very helpful to look and read this out loud. So the Supreme Court justices took an oath to guarantee a Republican form of government. We the people demand a declaratory judgment to restore our courts of justice under the law of the land. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside of supreme law finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of the principles of the Constitution. And that's Marbury versus Madison. I read a number one. I don't know why it's Dows. I gotta check that out. So I'll make a note of this. Let's see. I guess I'll just put a red mark here. Pretty sure that's, no, I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. Control Z. No, that is the right one. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I think it's Marbury versus Madison, but it could be Dows versus Biden. I'll have to look into that. Anyway, notice to agent is notice to principal, and that's a Montana code annotated 2023. And it said, we read that 18 USC, this is in addition to that, 18 USC subsection 2071A, whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Now, we're going for enforcement mostly through military. We got the JAG, J-E-G, it's the Judge Advocate General. We've got the National Guard Bureau. We got NORAD, which is NORTHCOM. And we have Office of the Air Force Inspector General. If anybody could think of any other individual that we might want to make a copy of this to, you know, just send your thoughts to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll see once whether it be appropriate or not. We're also copying numerous individuals. We're copying, and if anybody else thinks of anybody else that we should copy, again, just let us know. Send a mail at nationallibertyalliance.org and give us a suggestion. President Donald J. Trump, Senator Mike Lee, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator John Kennedy, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Josh Hawley. And I'm picking a lot of these names up because I see their faces often. I see them talking often when I listen to Congress questioning people, particularly, well, all kinds of individuals, and even what's been going on with the potential, with the attempted assassination. Congressman Mike Johnson, Congressman Jim Jordan, Congressman Marjorie Taylor, Congressman Matt Gaetz. I probably should put Congressman Woman Marjorie Taylor. Okay. Congresswoman, yeah. And Steve Scalise. Presentment. Comes now the constituted unified United States common law grand jury. Here and after, we the people, for unprecedented declaratory relief and action against all justices in all 94 federal district courts. The United States Supreme Court being the overseer of the federal judiciary. Nothing in this presentment is to be interpreted as being under civil law, which is repugnant to the common law of the land. This is a case concerning treason at the highest level. All officers of the court, including clerks, that avert this presentment by removing, mutilating, concealing, or covering up by any trick, scheme, or device these material facts herein, thereby preventing the escalation of this presentment to the justices of the United States Supreme Court, will be held liable for aiding and abetting pursuant to 18 U.S.C. subsection 2381 and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2. We the people are demanding declaratory judgments and orders of judicial dismissals defined in our wherefore clause. One way or another, justice will be met, and if the United States Supreme Court cannot find the fortitude to enforce the law of the land, then because of the magnitude of this of the conspiracy being addressed in this presentment, the military will. If the United States Supreme Court rejects the settling of this national emergency under the rules of the common law, then we the people, include in this indictment the justices of the United States Supreme Court. And since the present executive and majority of the Congress and Senate have been compromised, we the people, being the sovereign, considering our very republic is at stake, command the military to act and to secure what they took an oath to obey, protect, and uphold, the common law republic. We the people codified our unalienable right to the Declaration of Independence when we said, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce us under absolute despotism, it is our right, it is a duty, to throw off such government and to provide new gods for our future security. We the people demand that the United States Supreme Court do their sacred duty to guarantee a republican form of government by restoring the law of the land, open the doors of justice, and restore the people's courts of justice that proceeds according to the course of the common law of the land under Article 6, Clause 2, without which there is no justice, or resign your office for not honoring the oath that you have taken, will face the wrath of this grand jury. This presentment is not a prayer, it's a demand by the sovereigns that vested you with powers. Jurisdiction. The Federal Declaratory Judgment Act 28 U.S.C. subsection 2201A states, in the case of the actual controversy within its jurisdiction, any court of the United States, upon the filing of an appropriate, I've crossed out pleading and put demands by the people, may declare the right and other legal relations of any interested party seeking such declaration, whether or not further relief is or could be sought. Any such declaration shall have the force and effect of a final judgment or decree and shall be reviewable as such. And actually, there is nobody else to be reviewed by that, but that's what the Act says, so we included it. The United States Supreme Court has both subject matter jurisdiction and personam jurisdiction, having judicial power in all cases in law arising under the Constitution via Article 3, subsection 2. whereas this is a dispute concerning serious constitutional violation, insomuch that we are on the precipice of enslavement, whereby the federal judiciary violated the duty to guarantee to the people's courts of justice, not chancery. Whereas the United States Supreme Court, being a branch of the United States government, is to guarantee a republican form of government every state of the Union via Article 4, Subsection 4. Venue. The United States Supreme Court is the proper venue because the Supreme Court has oversight, whereas all the people of the United States have been injured and are in jeopardy. It is emphatically the providence and the duty of the Judicial Department to say what the law is. Marbury versus Madison. Presentment. The purpose of this presentment is to delineate the subversion of our courts by the insidious bar that also provided for paving the way for the subversion of our executive and legislative branches. The bar, being the crux of the subversion, found its way on American soil as early as 1750, while we were still British colonies. Its purpose was to abrogate the common law and replace it with Babylonian law, also known as civil law, Roman law, municipality law, in order to bring the colonies under the control of civil law, thus providing for the enslavement of the American colonies. After the colonies were formed, thus becoming the United Sovereign States, the bar had already succeeded in developing many chancery courts throughout the colonies that possessed general de facto equity powers distinct from common law courts, whereas chancellor judges took on the role of judge, jury, and executioner, where there is no grand or petit jury. Many, but not all, of these courts put up a facade giving the appearance of a people's court via stacked juries. Over time, these so-called equity courts found lodgment in our federal courts and was eventually solidified in 1938 via the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, making the end of justice courts in America. After our founding fathers succeeded in establishing a common law nation under God, they contended with the insidious bar that was destroying our newfounded God-given liberties that were secured by our founding documents. In response, in January 1810, Senator Reed proposed the Title of Nobility Amendment. The Senate voted to pass by a vote 26-1. The House resolved in the affirmation 87-3. By December 10, 1812, 12 of the required 13 states ratified Amendment 13, and in 1819, that reads as followed. That's when it was ratified. If any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor. Okay, remember, honor is the focus, not nobility. But anyway, bar lawyers have the title of high honor above gentlemen and below knights, called esquire. Or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present pension, office, or emolument of any kind whatever from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them or either of them. Sometime after 1865, the 13th Amendment that banned bar attorneys, esquires, from elective office and put practicing in our courts just disappeared, just in time for the founding of the American Bar Association in August 21, 1878, in Saratoga Springs, New York, by 100 esquires from 21 states. Equity, in its broadest and most general significance, this term denotes the spirit and the habit of fairness, justice, and right dealings. It is called positive law, which is man-made law, whereas in America it is for fictions only, such as corporations, interstate commercial activities, government agencies, and their agents, whereas law is natural law that we the people are under. As Samuel Adams said, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. Our U.S. Constitution established law and equity as the law of the land, whereas the foundation of our law is common law, also known as natural law, see the Declaration of Independence, thus establishing equity being man-made law under American jurisprudence established by the rules of common law, also known as maxims. Propagandized bar lawyers via a covert anti-common law plot by enemies domestic, nibbling away at we the people's republican form of government established under Article 4, Section 4, was ordained indelibly stating, the United States shall guarantee to every state of this union a republican form of government, not a democratic form of government. In Marbury versus Madison, it was decided it is a proposition too plain to be contested that the Constitution controls any legislative act or rule repugnant to it, or that the legislators, or Supreme Court, may alter the Constitution by any ordinary act. Certainly all those who have framed written constitutions contemplated or contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation, and consequently the theory of every such government must be that an act of legislation or rule repugnant to the Constitution is void. This theory is essentially attached to a written constitution and is consequently to be considered by this court as one of the fundamental principles of our society. It is not therefore to be lost sight of in further consideration of this subject. If an act of the legislator or Supreme Court repugnant to the Constitution is void, does it notwithstanding its invalidity bind the courts and oblige them to give it effect? Or, in other words, though it be not law, does it constitute a rule as operative as if it was a law? This would be to overthrow, in fact, what was established in theory and would seem at first view an absurdity too gross to be insisted on. It shall have, however, received a more attentive consideration. It is emphatically the providence and the duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. Those who apply the rule to particular cases must of necessity expound and interpret that rule. If two laws conflict with each other, the courts must decide on the operation of each. So if a law be in opposition to the Constitution, if both the law and the Constitution apply to a particular case, so that the court must either decide that case comfortably to the law, disregarding the Constitution, or comfortably to the Constitution, disregarding the law. The court must determine which of these conflicting rules governs the case. This is the very essence of judicial duty. If then the courts are to regard the Constitution and the Constitution as superior to any ordinary act of the legislator, the Constitution and not such ordinary act must govern the case to which they both apply. Those then who controvert the principle that the Constitution is to be considered in court as a paramount law are reduced to the necessity of maintaining that courts must close their eyes on the Constitution and see only the law. This doctrine would subvert the very foundation of all written constitutions. It would declare that an act which, accordingly to the principles and the theory of our government, is entirely void, is yet in practice completely obligatory. It would declare that if the legislator should do what is expressly forbidden, such act notwithstanding the express prohibition is in reality effectual. It would be given to the legislature a practical and a real omnipotence with the same breath which professes to restrict their power within narrow limits. It is prescribing limits and declaring that those limits may be passed at pleasure, that it thus reduces to nothing what we have deemed the greatest improvement on political institutions, a written constitution, would itself be sufficient in America where written constitutions have been viewed with so much reverence. For rejecting
one minute, John.
But the particular expressions of the Constitution of the United States furnishes additional arguments in favor of its rejection. Thus, the particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principles supposed to be essential to all written constitution, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts as well as other departments are bound by that instrument. The government of the United States has been emphatically termed a government of laws and not of men. it will certainly cease to deserve this high appellation if the law is furnished no remedy for the violation of a vested legal right. If the courts are to regard the Constitution and the Constitution is superior to any ordinary act of the legislator, the Constitution and not such ordinary act must govern the case to which they both apply. Those then who resist the principles that the Constitution is to be construed in the courts as a paramount law are reduced to the necessity of maintaining that courts must close their eyes to the Constitution and see only the law. This doctrine would subvert the very foundation of all written constitutions. By the way, I have a feeling this was a repeating of what we earlier read in this case, but I'll mark it as read and check it out and make sure. Maybe it was repeated redundantly for a purpose. I don't know, but I'll take a look. So those then who resist the principles that the Constitution is to be considered in court as a paramount law are reduced to the necessity of maintaining that courts must close their eyes in the Constitution and see only the law. This doctrine would subvert the very foundation of all written Constitution. It would declare that an act which, according to the principles and theory of our government, is entirely void, is yet in practice completely obligatory. It would declare that if the legislature shall do what is expressly forbidden, such act, notwithstanding the express prohibition, is in reality effectual. It would be given to the legislature a practical and real omnipotence with the same breath which professes to restrict their powers within natural limits. It is prescribing limits and declaring that those limits may be passed at pleasure. It is in these words, I do solemnly swear that I will administer justice without respect to persons and do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and partially discharge all the duties incumbent on me as according to the best of my abilities and understanding, agreeably to the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Why does a judge swear to discharge his duties agreeably to the Constitution of the United States if that Constitution forms no rule for his government? If it is closed upon him and cannot be inspected by him, if such be the real state of things, this is worse than solemn mockery. To prescribe or to take this oath becomes equally a crime. In conclusion, this presentment will clearly establish and delineate the evil that has found lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence and pave a plan to correct it. Any resistance will find themselves under the wrath of justice. Authority of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We, the sovereign people, have the unalienable right to have government by consent through free and independent administrations of our own juries. We have the unbridled right to impanel and preside over our proceedings unfettered by technical rules and to investigate merely on suspicion. The judiciary, through Congress's bar-written laws and the judiciary's bar-written rules, have subverted and tainted our juries and hidden our natural law courts of record. It is the grand jury's function to consider criminal charges, whereas prosecutors have no authority to change or negotiate away our findings or negotiate a deal with the accused. That would be the prerogative of the petit jury. Grand jury indictments are final and cannot be added to or taken away from without our consent. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is the definition and limitation of power. Sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and foreign courts cannot condemn influences persuading sovereign to make the decree. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative, and the state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Supreme sovereignty is in the people, and no authority can, on any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as it shall be derived from and granted by the people of this state. We, the people, have been providentially provided legal resource to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary ourselves, entrusted via natural law to dispense justice. We, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We, the people, vested Congress with statute-making powers. We, the people, defined and limited Congress's power to make lawmaking. We the people ordained limited lawmaking powers via the Constitution. We the people did not vest judiciary with lawmaking or rulemaking powers. We the people in all courts of law are free and independent jurists, independent from the judiciary. We the people reserve the right to remove and replace elected or appointed guards when they become destructive to the security of our liberties. See the Declaration of Independence. The constitutions of most of our states assert that all power is inherited in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves both fact and law in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. In the United States Supreme Court case of United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branch of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administrated to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Thus, people have the unbridled right to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of indictments to a court, which is then required to commence criminal proceedings. Our founding fathers presentially thereby created a buffer that people may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, criminally violate the law. Elected sheriffs or coroners vested by natural law may summons a grand jury. We, the people vested by nature's God, may gather ourselves, if justice calls, as the sureties of peace on behalf of all the people. In 1215 A.D., 25 free men assembled themselves in the name of sureties of peace, stood up to restore the natural law courts of justice, thereby taking back their island nation, England, that was subverted by a tyrant king. In 1776, 56 sovereigns assembled themselves in the name of we the people, stood up to restore their natural law courts of justice, thereby taking back their 13 American colonies that were subverted by a tyrant king. Today, herein, more than 11,400 and counting grand jurists assembled themselves from every state in the name of we the people to stand and restore our natural law courts of justice, thereby taking back these 50 United States of America that were subverted by the federal judiciary and its cohorts. We the people, having been providentially provided legal recourse to adjust the criminal conduct of the said judiciary, ourselves entrusted to dispense justice. Natural law.
Yes, John.
Okay, I'm going to try to find a place to stop. Okay, natural law demands that only the people, via free and independent grand juries and pettijuries, have the supreme judicial authority to indict or not, to decide the law, to sit as the tribunals in all criminal cases, to nullify any statute, to deny any rule, to judge guilt or innocent, to pronounce the remedy or punishment, free from judiciary interference. Tribunals are established in 12 unalienable sovereigns whose decisions are final and cannot be overturned. This is government by consent. New York State Constitution, Article 1, Bill of Rights, Subsection 8 states, the jury shall have the right to determine the law and the facts. Let me just see where I might stop here at this. Okay, I may have to stop in the middle of this because there's quite a bit still going on in this section, but let me just read this final paragraph, and we'll pick up on this next week. The United States Supreme Court in Schneckloth versus Bustamante said, the decisions of the Superior Court may only be challenged in a court of appeals. The decision of an inferior court is subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a Superior Court, one may sue an inferior court directly, rather than resort to appeal to an appellate court. And let me tell you what that means. If you go into a court, these courts that they have running today, which again, you know, these courts are all civil law courts, and they really are chancery courts run with chancellors. Okay, so that's an inferior court. So when you walk into that court and you open a court of record, then you have the, when they make decisions contrary to the law, you can sue them directly in opposed to going through the appeal. Now, we have done that on a couple of occasions, but they ignore it and keep on going. We have to go through the appeal process and usually get kicked out, and it's almost impossible to get up to the Supreme Court. There are certain cases that I think, like we have a sheriff's case going on, and I think that's going to climb itself up to the United States Supreme Court because I don't think they have the ability to refuse it. But we're also going to add that case into this case, so we put a section in here concerning bringing our sheriffs back to power and authority. Okay, so let me just reread that because it's very important for people to understand this. The United States Supreme Court in Sackcloth versus Bustamante said, the decisions of a superior court may be challenged in a court of appeal. Now remember, they're calling these courts the state courts, superior courts, and you can appeal. The decisions of an inferior court, they are inferior to a court of record, are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to an appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or a Supreme Court, can second guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgment and the finale of that, of course, is a jury trial. The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to the inquiry concerning the facts by deciding. Okay, so I'm going to end it here, and I'll just mark that with yellow here. And we'll pick up on our reading of this next week. And like I said, we're going to go through this whole case. Every week we'll spend 20 minutes or so reading through it, and I'm going to do my best to keep ahead of this. And I pretty much got 108 pages, but some of this may be deleted. And then we have a lot of memorandums that are going to attach to this. So it's going to be probably with the memorandums up around 200 pages that's going to be filed. We're not going to read. We may at some point read a lot of these memorandums. Some of these memorandums we have already read. Although a lot of the memorandums I've read, we've done in the past, you know, from recently I've been going through them and making some changes, some corrections, but no major changes that injures what has been said before, but just better ways to say it, or a more powerful way, or a shorter way to say it. You know, in law, and like in anything in life, really, less is more. Trying to be specific, focused, and keep, you know, whittling things down to the minimum amount of words, the minimum amount of paragraphs to say what you have to say with the maximum possibility of its meaning is far better than, you know, a lengthy thing. And the same thing with affidavits. Anybody that wants to put an affidavit into our case, be sure to make sure that you do not get wordy with it. You don't talk about the law. All you do is you talk about the injury. And you get some instructions here. So again, read through this information if you're going to attach an affidavit to our case. And again, justice will prevail at some point. People will be restored at some point. But of course, it'll be next year sometime. It'll be after the smoke clears and things are settled down and structure of the United States is brought back to where it should be, courts of justice restructured. So that could take many months into next year. But I would think by the middle of next year, people will start to be able to get restored to all the injuries that they've been injured in these courts. And it's not just the federal courts here, by the way. This extends all the way down to the state courts, as I mentioned before, and into the county courts. But when we take that to federal courts, then we put the pressure on the state courts. It's a slam dunk and be done very quickly. And if we can get 50 volunteers, one person from each state, to make the filing on our behalf, it'll make things a lot easier in order to bring them back into subjection, and we could do it a lot quicker, of course. So we'll see where we go. We also, again, are going to be moving forward with a plan that we're working with Colonel McGregor and with Our Country, Our Choice. And we have a strong suspicion, a lot of people feel that know about what's going on here with this thing, feels the same thing of what I'm going to say, is that we're going to have the opportunity to get a large exposure to millions of people. And that, if we can expose what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance to millions of people, then we have that opportunity of hitting critical mass. I have calculated And I think this is even kind of a high number. We could do it a lot less than this, I think. But, you know, it'd be strong at this point. I have calculated, I think we have over 300 million people in the United States, you know, people who are real citizens of the United States. And I calculated that it'll take 300,000 people across America to 100% take control of this nation and never lose it again as long as we maintain that control and the committees of safety. So we have 3,134 counties, so if we have 3,000 committees going, 100 committees apiece, you know, 300 committees of safety going, 100 committeemen apiece in each one of those, that's 300,000 people. And that's our goal, that's what we're heading for. That's our plan to take back the United States, to take back our nation, to take back our republic. Okay, with that, just real quick, Terry, I wanted to mention to you, we're starting to take up a lot of space up on, you know, what is it, the start meeting where we have the storage. So this week I'm going to start deleting, and hopefully as of, you know, today, hopefully you're updated with everything you need for the MP3 uploads. I'm doing the
I download them as I go.
So you're up to date then?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to start deleting so we can get more space up there. Okay, with that, I don't know if any of our leadership has anything to say, any comments on this before we open up the queue. And anybody wants to get into the queue, we do have people in the queue right now. But to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and a 1. If you're on an app, there should be a button, enter the queue. Any of the leadership has anything to say or add to anything we've been talking about? And hopefully we're going to focus in on the things that we need to focus in, and that is building committees of safety, educating ourselves, coming together, bringing communication between the counties, and saving the republic, taking back our courts. Okay, I guess nobody on a national end has anything. So, okay, we're going to go.
Just keep on keeping on, John. You know, I think we should develop a plan of attack here when this thing does go live. I think we should hit the ground running. I have some ideas. Maybe we can just discuss it sometime this week and see what we might think.
Okay. Are these ideas we might want to deal with and look at in an open forum, like for everybody, or do you think we need to be private for a while? I mean, we do very little private things, but... But anyway,
yeah, very little private. But let's just kick it around. Just not because I want to keep it private, but just because I want to shape it without wasting anybody's time.
Okay. All right. So maybe Jan, you can help set us a meeting up, and we can meet and make a discussion. And then once we come to some conclusions, we'll bring that discussion out to maybe next Monday's open forum, and see once what others have to say and what they have to add to it. Okay.
That sounds good. Thursday afternoon works for me. I'm just throwing that out there. I yield.
Okay. Let me look at my Thursday this week. Thursday works for me, too. So, Jan, if you can set this up with everyone for Thursday afternoon, 12, 1 o'clock, you know, whatever, something, let me know. Let us know. Okay. So let's go over to Q&A. And let's see what we got here. Okay, we only got 3 people in the queue, so hey, anybody wants to get into this queue, now's the time. *6 and a 1 on the phone, and hit the enter the queue and A button if you're on an app or a browser. Okay, first person, Anthony, West Virginia, how you doing? You got the mic.
Hello, John, how you doing?
Doing good, thank you.
I'm Anthony from West Virginia. There's something that came up. There's a little noise here. Let me get in a different area.
All right.
It's okay. Something came up last week.
Something came up last week. You still with us, Anthony? Am I coming through?
Yes, yes, you are. Anthony, it seems to have disappeared a bit.
Can
Anthony, you still with us? There you go. We got you. Go ahead.
Let me get back on my phone. Let me get back on my phone. Stand by, please. Are you there now? Are we here? Okay, good. I'm so sorry. That took a lot of time. Hasn't been a really great day, and I'm not sure if this information is going to be good or not. Two other fellow friends of mine, we consecrated West Virginia in 2014, I'm pretty sure it was. And so I took some time off. I went to school after we did that, and I turned over the state to a friend of mine, Bill Baker. I gave him everything. I gave him, the seal and everything else went with it. But recently, I got together with Bill and I got everything back, and he hadn't been doing much with it. Well, first time I got something, back from him, we met at the Veterans Hospital, and then a couple of days later he says, I've got one more box. Well, last week or a week and a half ago, I picked up that other box and I just put it underneath my table. And then I looked in it to see what it was just a couple of days ago. So I have a question for you. When we consecrated the counties, did you at the national level decide to send the paperwork to all of the county clerks, or were we supposed to do that?
No, we definitely didn't do it. It's not necessary to do to all the county clerks. That would have been too large of a, it was big enough for us to go through the entire United States and hit every county. Of course, there are some counties that don't have many people living in it, like up in Alaska and a few other places, but we did hit Alaska also, by the way. You go up into northern New York here, there's counties that just don't have many people in also. But we did visit all the counties. A lot of counties we did two or three at a time. It was a huge amount of work, took a lot of time to do, and a lot of people working on it, and we didn't have enough volunteers to go deeper than we needed to, but we don't have to go any deeper than we need anyway. The key thing to the whole process ultimately was to create the unified United States common law grand jury in an appropriate way that would be something that can't be argued against by the quote-unquote powers that be. So, and a matter of fact, that's why in our paper, for instance, let me just quickly go here, and we do have a paper in here that gets into the detail of what we did and how we did it. Okay, including every state. But if you look here, we have every state listed because we have confirmed, we have constituted the grand jury, the Unified United States, the Unified State Common Law Grand Jury, so Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury, New Jersey, et cetera. And then all came together for the purpose of creating the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Now, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is the only active grand jury. It was never intended that these state and juries would ever come to any activity. But we did want them to do in a formal way. We wanted them to get an address. We wanted them for mailing purposes, because we did do some mailing, and I forget exactly how that went. But again, we wanted an address.
I did have a P.O. box for a while.
Yeah, and we wanted a seal, and we wanted paperwork making the declaration. But again, it's okay that the P.O. box has gone away or whatever, it expired.
I put my new one up there. I've got a new P.O. box. I just associated a different one on the website. I put the address there, okay. I think.
Well, the key thing, the whole purpose was to empower the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. One of the things that's a problem, we can't activate all these grand juries in a way, and then we don't know what they're doing, what kind of education. It's a wrongdoing to empower people without an education, and, they make a lot of problems and create as much problems as we've got. So, but the whole plan has always been to empower the unified United States common law grand jury, that we come with power and authority, as we've read about in this paper, and we have more to read about for that power and authority, got a lot more to read about. And so we the people have the power, we have the authority. We created the United States of America. We the people are the ones that ordained and established the Constitution.
Exactly.
Control them. So, but the whole point was really to empower one focus, one point, and the only, you know, the length of time that unified United States common law grand jury, for them to continue, which is us, all of us here at National Liberty Alliance, all that participate, and everybody doesn't participate at the same time. Some people come in here and there. We haven't had a meeting in quite some time as far as to do an indictment, so it's been a long time, or any some other work. But again, the whole purpose was to create this to deal with enemies, foreign and domestic, particularly domestic, within our government. And that's what we're doing here. That's why we created this unified United States common law grand jury. And once that is accomplished, and that accomplishment will be take place once the paper that we're reading about and talking about tonight, and we'll be talking about over the coming weeks, once we take back and that becomes accomplished in the courts, and that is accomplished, you know, what we have written, we're going to get to the wherefore clause and everything, I think is going to be very powerful. But once we accomplish that, the unified United States common law grand jury will cease to exist. It'll then, you know, depart.
Okay.
We'll close it down, because the whole thing is to create the common law. The whole purpose is to create the committees of safety in every county, and also to get the administrators, which is 4 to 5 people, 4 administrators, 1 paralegal, who is also an administrator, so 5 people in every county, which is a paid position. We have an education process going on right now for anybody who wants to take on that job. But we need 5 people in every county for the sole purpose of being the administrators for the juries. They will orientate the juries. They will assist the grand jury in an investigation. They'll empower them and open the doorways to government agencies in order for them to do investigations, if for whatever reason they want to do that for. And those individuals will be free and independent. They take an oath to operate and pursue things with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And as long as that is, those 3 points are made and constantly kept you know, in front of them as they you know, do their work, then there shouldn't be any problems. Should some kind of a problem come up with, maybe you got a rogue individual, maybe someone who's a little wacky or whatever, maybe they're a sociopath or something, and they refuse to comply to operating with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, not stepping outside of our authority, and those kind of things. If that's a problem, it can be settled by if there's one person that's a problem, they can settle it among themselves. If it becomes something where it's sort of, you know, they're kind of caught between not being able to settle that problem, then that's when they would go to the committees of safety, the Judiciary Committee, who should be working with them. And there's a lot of things that they could be doing to work with these administrators. But you know, they will take it to the Judiciary Committee and bring the case before them. They will make a decision, and that'll be a final decision. It would be one appeal to that, and if there was an appeal to that decision, then they could take it to a sister county, and then they can either agree or disagree with the decision. And
that's all going to be done within the level of the committees of safety now.
The committees of safety will have a lot of power in that if a problem arises. Also, it'll be up to the Judiciary Committee or the committees of safety in order to make sure that these individuals that have taken this authoritative power, and again, it's a paying job, because you know, we're going to get rid of the system that they have set up right now, they have. I know here in New York we call them Commissioner of Jurors, and it's all bar individuals that run that. Okay, but we're going to replace it with the people. So we're going to take their money, away from them and give it to the people for this purpose, because this is our business. This is for the people to run. Government shouldn't be running this. And so we'll be free and independent from them, separated from them. And so these people, they're five individuals. They have to be educated. Of course, the one individual that would be the a paralegal, okay, obviously they are a paralegal. They have to be a paralegal to take on their job, so we'll be looking for paralegals. But they will have to take the administrator's courses just like everyone else, and they have to get through that. They'll have to get a certificate, and it's up to the jury administrators, well, let me step back a minute. It's up to the Committee of Safety, the subcommittee, which would be the jury, the Judiciary Committee. It'd be their job to check in on these people to make sure that they're progressing if they haven't finished their course, and that they get it done and a certificate is gotten, and a certificate should be filed with that committee. Now, if one person quits or passes away or whatever the case may be and it has to be fulfilled, then that person, that would be up to the Judiciary Committee to fill that particular position. Okay. Anybody can go for that position, and anybody who's got a certificate that accomplished the goals they had to accomplish, then they can take that job on. Now, one other thing that's very important, you don't have to live in the county that you serve. So, for instance, where I'm at, I'm in Dutchess County. I'm not too far away from the courts where we'd be working if I was one. I don't have the time to run for that position. But in any event, right next, this is in Poughkeepsie where the courthouse is. This is the county court, the state court in Dutchess County. So right across the bridge is Ulster County, okay, and it's a short distance from Orange County. So someone living in Orange County or Ulster County, they may find it a shorter distance to go to work by coming across the bridge and working in Dutchess.
Yeah, that works out.
They could do that. They don't have to live in the county that they're running as far as a job. Now, if you live in one county and you want to go into that county and those positions are filled and you take a position in the county next door, wherever that may be, okay, and then there's an opening back in your county, then that person has the opportunity to move over. But controlling and making sure that these individuals are properly educated and dealing with problems that they might be brought to them by the administrators because they have a problem with an individual that they can't settle on their own, it's up to them to really take control of all that. But again, it's kind of premature for that because all of this is brand new and starting up. And that's why it's so important for the people that are in the committees of safety to get their proper education, to understand what their powers are, what their authorities are. And, of course, that's found here under Starter Committee of Safety. And if you come down to handbooks, videos, and tools, that's where you get all the handbooks that will describe all this information I'm talking about. So they need to understand this and understand what they need to do. There are some committees of safety that are going on, and they don't have much contact with us. We don't have enough big contact to them. But hopefully when we hit critical mass, we'll be able to get enough volunteers and maybe even go professional, because we should go professional here at National Liberty Alliance. At that point in time, when we have more people, we can make more connections and start connecting and getting more activity and communications going back and forth with these county committees of safety. Not only communications between us and them, but to encourage communications between the counties within their states and even state to state. And again, our motto, so to speak, is they must increase and we must decrease. The point is that we don't get involved. They're free and independent. Safety are free. We do not get involved with giving marching orders or telling people what to do. We give suggestions. We set things up. We educate. We help communicate. We want to talk about national issues and get those things out. We'll give our thoughts and ideas, what we think should be done. Other people that are coming into that meeting may come up with other ideas, and it's up to the committees of safety to discover which way they want to go on this situation or that situation.
In your experience and your studies and putting together committees of safety, had you ever come across the term committees of communication.
Yeah, it's called the Committee of Correspondence.
Committee of Correspondence. Okay.
That's one of the main committees. Matter of fact, if you go to our directory, okay, go to, let's see, directory, and you click
so
on
the Committee of Safety is really a committee, the old Committee of Correspondence.
No, Committee of Correspondence is a subcommittee to the Committee of Safety. There's a judicial committee of correspondence, political committee, and so on. So if you go out here and these people that registered, let's see, you're in West Virginia. Let's see if we got one.
John, I hate to interrupt you right here, but my question really hasn't. I've still got this thing with the box before we can come back to where we are with this Committee of Correspondence.
Okay, let me just make this one point before we go. Hold on, let me make a point before.
All right, go ahead.
For instance, here we have you, Anthony, you're in Mercer County, and we have Wayne County, okay? So actually, you and Chad in Wayne County is actually the Committee of Correspondence. And there should be numerous people, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 people. You know, we'd like to see at least 4 people in every subcommittee, and we could have 100 people in the committee. You know, the more the merrier. But the point is, and anybody can change as being the contact of that. At some point in time, if you wanted to move to a different committee, that'd be fine. And I imagine you can be on more than one committee if you have that time to be able to do those things. But in any event, someone has got to be a communicational contact so that if Chad decides he needs to be talking to someone in Mercy County, he comes here and gets the number. He should know you. All the individuals on this within your state eventually should know each other because there needs to be communications on things that you have to work together. Every county has their own unique problems and situations, but you have problems that affect other counties, and you need to be working with them and coming up with different solutions and try to work things out to work together on it, you know? But anyway,
exactly.
Back to you.
So anyway, I still have this box, and inside the box, we have 55 counties in West Virginia. Inside the box are all the papers that in 55 different folders are the papers for each county that I sealed with my seal, and we signed physically, and I thought we were supposed to mailed those to the city clerk, to the county clerks. Did we pull the plug on that and I forgot about it?
Well, I don't remember, but it's not necessary. Maintain the paperwork for right now. It's a matter of history also, and that's up to safety to really, you know, secure and maintain anything that's necessary from the beginnings onward. You know, all the meetings should have minutes going on. Everything should be recorded and maintained. Now, we do not report to the government. We, the people, are sovereign, free, and independent. We don't tell them anything that we need to do or not do. We just do what we need, feel, and necessary to do, that which is just and right, and the subject, nothing more than that. But, you know, it is good if we decide to say, well, okay, we get all the counties, going where you have committees of safety everywhere, and we got the also the administrators going in the county, and so on, and if we wanted to do something in the county to make a declaration concerning that, let's think about that. Maybe we'll do that. I don't know that we want to send them our records, but for the sake of history, I think this stuff should be maintained by the Secretary of the
State. Okay, well, that takes a load off my mind there, because I thought, well, wow, what did we do?
Yeah.
Didn't we need to mail these in?
Yes.
So that's good.
Our founding fathers didn't have that problem either anyway, and what they ended up, they only had to serve one paper. It was called the Declaration of Independence. So,
Well, we're moving on. Nice chatting with you again, John, and I'm looking forward to hearing it out today and making communication again. The Bible verse today was very, I was just right timing for me. We'll put it that way. You know, there's all the Bible verses are great. But
yeah, I was reading
every
it.
Every once in a while, they'll hit you really the way you need to hear it. And that happened for me today. So we'll see you next time. Talk to you later. Thank you so much.
All right. Hey, Gerard, if you want to take the mic, take control of the Q&A, it's open for you. But let me take the next person while I'm waiting to see if you want to do that. Okay, Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, you hear me?
I can hear you, Ross. Go right ahead.
I listened to this guy on who talks about just two different jurisdictions, multiple jurisdictions in the United States, it's not just one. And he said, if you never claimed what the right jurisdiction, that's why they would never listen to you in the court of law.
It is true. You have to understand jurisdictions. There are many jurisdictions. You know, there are jurisdictions, there are different jurisdictions in the county courts, in the state courts. Clearly, there are many jurisdictions when you go down into the lower courts, which really have to deal with fictions as far as, you know, town courts, village courts, and so on. But even in the federal court, there are 57 jurisdictions in the federal court. So, for instance, you know, let me take a quick look here at some of these jurisdictions in the federal court. You know, for instance, you have USC Title I, which is the general provisions of all of the titles. But USC Title II, that controls Congress. So Congress is being controlled by this particular legislative setup in USC Title 22. The president is USC Title III. Agriculture is Title VII. Armed Forces is 10. I'm just jumping through this. Coast Guards are 14. Copyright is under 17. Food and Drug Administration is 21. Labor is under 29. And it goes on and on and on. Voting and election is 52. Wildlife is 56. So all of these are different jurisdictions in the federal court. And then, of course, there's actually one more other than 57 is 58, because the 58th or the first or whatever you want to call it is law itself. But the federal courts should not be listening to a lot of cases in law. You know, the Constitution really lays out what kind of authority. For instance, if you've been denied a certain unalienable right, or the right, let's take the right of due process. Okay, well, you could take that to the federal court if you're being denied the right of due process in a state court, and they have the authority and they have the duty to hear that case and deal with that problem, and they should always be siding for the people who are seeking their due process. It's clear either we're getting due process or we're not. If they're not giving us due process, then that court can demand that we get it and order that court to do what has to be done in order to give that due process. And that's the same thing with any right. So now there's other things that could be heard in the federal court. I think they changed it by amendment, but I believe if a person was suing another person in another state, I think that was in a federal court. I think that's written up in the Constitution here. But I believe that's been changed by amendment. I'll have to look into that. But that's just an example.
Okay, if you are talking about the 14th Amendment, you're under the federal jurisdiction, not actually the de jure jurisdiction at all.
Well, I'm not sure I understand your point or your question. Let's see. Let's read the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. What's the jurisdiction thereof? That jurisdiction is law. They can play games with the words because they really meant to try to do something else with that. But we'll put it where it belongs because there's only one solution to that. That jurisdiction is law. At law, in law, law. All three, that means law according to the
Congress. I think Congress meant actually the civil law under that context.
That's what the enemy meant. But it doesn't say that. And if we're going to, remember, law is constructive. If we're going to interpret the meaning of that, then as we look back, we can see that the only jurisdiction that the people are under is the law of the land. So that brings us back to common law, period. But bear in mind also, all these different jurisdictions that we spoke about, and many other jurisdictions and states, you know, all these jurisdictions, all of them are governed by the common law, by American jurisprudence. And American jurisprudence really is really any kind of a a lot of decisions by the United States Supreme Court or even state courts would become part of American jurisprudence as long as it's in harmony with the common law. Same thing with any kind of legislation, like any of these codes we just talked about. Any of this legislation must be in harmony with the common law. If it's not in harmony with the common law, that's what we were reading about a little while ago concerning the Supreme Court, anything that's repugnant to the Constitution, any law, that law being the little law, being equity. Equity is man-made law. It's also called positive law. Positive law is man-made law. Under our Constitution, everything is under common law, the law of the land. Okay, so it must conform to that which is just and right. It must conform to common law. And it's ruled over, the rules are, and up until 1938, this was true for equity as well as for law cases, that the rules of the rules of the courts were the rules of common law. In other words, maxims. And that's true also with equity. And that's why the jury has the power and the authority to negate anything that they feel is repugnant, okay? So they can deny and do whatever they want, because remember, we're the sovereign. You know, look at, the jury has the power to think and say, well, hey, this law makes kind of sense here, and it's a good law, but in this case, it just doesn't work. We don't like it. Nullify it, okay? That's the power and the authority. Why? Because the sovereign makes the law. Who's the sovereign? We the people. The jury makes the law. The grand jury makes the law. They decide all things. Now, of course, the real law that we're under is, of course, the laws of nature and of nature's God. Okay, that's the law. We're all under that. All right, and God makes that law. We don't get to change any of that. But as far as equity is concerned, we have the power and authority over that to decide.
Yeah, that, I think the problem with that was when we used the birth certificate, they switched us into a maritime jurisdiction.
Correct. Well, they did. That was part of their game, their plan. You know, it used to be that, you know, generally speaking, again, we're a Christian nation. And most and births were recorded in the Bible. Maybe they were recorded in the towns or whatever. Possibly, I really don't know. But there was no requirement of a birth certificate prior until that came out. But that was part of their plan in order to really enslave us. You know, they put situations. You got the Social Security number. You can't open a court. You can't open a bank account without a Social Security. A birth certificate. You don't exist without one. Okay, you can't get go if you wanted to get a driver's license, which I have and I maintain and will always have for two reasons. Number one, from time to time in the past, I have driven commercially, and who knows, I may want to drive commercially again. So I'll have that and maintain it. It's also a good identification. And it also keeps me out of jail when the cops stop me, too. So, I mean, not that I should have to do that, but cops are ignorant. And unfortunately, sheriffs are ignorant, too. And we have a big job ahead of us to educate our sheriffs. It's a big, big problem. But in any event, the 14th...
See, I was thinking, should I get a certificate of non-citizen national?
No, I wouldn't go through that. I don't know why anybody really wants to do that. Look at it. If you give up your...
It says in the certificate nationality is really U.S. national. We the people are U.S. nationals, not...
Well, I'm a citizen of New York, okay? You're either a citizen of your state or you're not. Yeah, I'm a citizen of New York. I'm a citizen of the United States because I can go into any state and be a citizen of that state, and so I'm a citizen of the United States. Any state I enter into, I can get the rights and everything of the citizen of that state, and so on and so forth, which is should be the same as my state being New York, okay? There's nothing special I have to do. I was born free, and I'm free, period. Now, in order for a person to become a citizen here, a foreigner, we've written it into, it's written in the Constitution that they rewrote the law on how to have people, brought in as citizen. I think they call it national, something nationalized or something. But in other words, we gave them the power, we gave the federal government the power to make people citizens. So they go through the federal process to become a citizen. And then they get to be a citizen of any state they want to live in. And again, as the wheels on your car go from one boundary into another state, I become a citizen of that state in the sense that I can execute anything there as long as I'm in that state in a judicial process or anything until my wheels go across a line into another state. But again, you know, you're a citizen. Our founding fathers had no problem with the word citizens. The enemy has played games with that word. As a matter of fact, the word citizen is used 7 times in the Constitution. So I wouldn't worry about it. You don't have to do anything special to be free. You are already free. You were born here. That's it. End of subject. God gave you the liberty ultimately, and we're a Christian nation, so we fall under natural law, and that's it. You know, Obama declared that we're no longer, when he was president, declared that we're no longer a Christian nation. You know, that's unbelievable that he could make such a statement. You know, they did do a little studies on Christianity, and I went out to look, and I found out that almost 1/3 of the world is Christian, one form or another. You know, all kinds of denominations and so on, but almost 1/3 of the world is Christian, and you know, you go to Russia, a huge majority. Of people in Russia, almost as much percentage-wise of people being Christian in Russia as well as in the United States. And there are some countries that actually have more Christians than the United States, believe it or not. But we're up there close to the 80 percentile. We're somewhere in the 70, 78, 76 percent or something like that. Anything else, Ross? Ross, did we lose you? Or did I get lost?
No, if I hear you, John, I don't hear Ross.
Ross, are you still with us? Okay, we're going to have to move on because we're not hearing anything. All right, we're going to move on. If you have to talk some more, you can get back into the queue again. There's only 3 other people in the queue, so we'll see where we go. Okay, we'll take our next caller. It's someone calling from a 313. Emil, is it? First
yeah.
name?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, how you doing today?
Good. What state are you in?
I'm in Michigan.
Michigan. Okay, so Emil from Michigan, right?
Correct.
All right, Ed, you got the mic.
Okay, I was driving. I got pulled over because of I didn't have no license plate. I had my own plate. At the time, I was on probation, and I had my arms in the car with me when I got pulled over. And make a long story short, I went to jail for 42 days, and The attorney they gave me wanted me to plead guilty. I said, well, I didn't commit no crime because I was homeless. I was living in my car. And where they wanted me to put my guns at, you know. So I kept trying, and it just didn't work. So I tried to do a jury, and they all proclaimed me being guilty. And so what I did was I'm just fighting it right now because right now I have a felony on my record and I didn't commit no crime, and I was just trying to figure out how can I do that. I try to do an appeal, so I'm waiting for that to take place now. But I really don't want nobody to stand for me. I want to stand for myself because this court system is very, very wicked. There hasn't been no judge in office since 1783, 87, I think it is. And I really want to get my justice back and get my guns back. And they took my car, and my car was in my trust. My guns was in my Schedule A, my trust. You know, they basically took my car without the title, which is, I was turned on to true billing, and true bill basically said, can no one repossess my vehicle without the title? You know, and they took my car and you know, let me
ask you a question or two. Who taught you this stuff?
Just reading.
Okay, because like a lot of people out there teaching all kinds of things. I'm not necessarily saying they're wrong, but the way they're going about dealing with the problem is a problem. You know, to drive without plates, you know, sure, I don't think we should need plates either. I don't know what the solution would be. I would suggest or think that the solution should be when you buy a car, it should have something on it already that identifies the car with the owner from the standpoint you purchase the car, you own it, okay? And, you know, you shouldn't have to get plates to renew them or any of that nature because all that becomes a problem. It's a money-making thing, and there's other things involved with that. But a car should have some kind of identification. The problem is they boxed us in. I was talking a little earlier about this. You know, you can't get a bank account unless you have a Social Security number. There's a lot of things you can't do unless you have good ID. You know, you can't drive without a license, and all these things they kind of put us in a box, and if we don't comply, they're going to put us in jail. So. You know, to some degree, it makes sense to comply unless you don't mind sitting in jail a lot, and you'll be constantly put in jail over and over and over again because that's what these evil people do. Well, we got to get rid of all this stuff, but you got to find a way to survive until that happens. Insurance is an important thing to have because if you do injure somebody, you need to be able to compensate that individual for that other vehicle. And that's why insurance is important. If you have enough money to insure yourself because you just happen to be rich or something, you have something that has value that you can apply that could be used, of course. But I think there is a process to deal with that kind of thing as opposed to having insurance. I think there's a way to work that out legally. Not sure, but I think there is. I would not drive without a license because I know I'd end up in jail, and I don't have time to be in jail. So, but again, I have it for other reasons. First of all, I got my license when I was ignorant to it anyway, number one. Number two, I was driving from time to time commercially in my past. So again, you know, it's a good ID, so I have it. And even after we fix everything, whatever we work out, some kind of an ID, maybe a state ID, not necessarily for driving, but just a state ID that if you want to have to identify yourself, you know. Again, a lot of these things have to be thought out, worked out, and therein is a good reason why the committees of safety need to be communicating, because they're the ones that have to make the decisions. We have government by consent. Government by consent can be accomplished only one way, through committees of safety. That's the only way. You know, they'll tell you that you have to vote or go be on their stacked juries when they call you, and that's your job. That's all you have. That's government by consent. Nothing could be further from the truth. Of course, that is part of government by consent, becoming a jurist when called for. So that is part of government by consent. Voting, of course, that's part of government by consent. But it goes far more than that. The work of the committees of safety is the true government by consent. There is no other way. This is what our founding fathers set up. That's why you have the committeemen. But the committeemen have lost all of their power and authority. You know, you have what's called they claim elected committeemen. They're not really elected. They're actually appointed by the party boss. And that's a whole new subject to get into on its own. But the committeemen was taken over. Goodness, over 150, maybe 200 years ago. In the very beginning, they already started destroying the committeemen and taking them over. And by, I believe it was 19, well, let me think. I think it was 1801 or 1802 is when the Democratic Party came into being. Prior to that, they were called the Federalists. The Federalists was the Democratic Party. The Federalists were, and not all of them, okay, but the controlling part of that party, okay, the party bosses already in play, they were controlling that. And it was the Federalists that maintained slavery, because our founding fathers wanted to get rid of slavery, but there was too much of a resistance, and that came from the Federalists. And then the Federalists morphed into the Democratic Party, I believe it was 1802. And the whole purpose of turning into the Democratic Party is to try to convince the people that we're a democracy. And over time, they did a heck of a job over that, haven't they? Everybody calls us democracy. Every ignorant person, which is most people, myself included at one point in time, but most people are ignorant to our founding fathers, the process, the political process, the judicial process, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, common law. I mean, all this stuff, totally ignorant to it. So they're convinced they're, you know, you got to keep the slaves dumb. You can't control a slave. You can't allow a slave to get educated. That's why way back when there was slavery, they wouldn't allow the slaves the ability to read and write, because they'll get too smart and they'll start to rebel, you know, start to realize certain things. So it's the same thing. Nothing has changed. We read and write maybe, but we've got all this distortment. You know, the political process, totally distorted. The judicial process, totally distorted. People believe that they have to go to jail when a judge tells them they've got to go to jail, that they can't get a jury trial. They believe all that stuff. Nothing could be further from the truth from the way this country is put together, okay? But as long as people are ignorant, as Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. No way. It doesn't exist anywhere in nature, anywhere in this world. Can't happen. So the people expect to be ignorant free, they expect what never was and never will be. So, again, we have to comply with some of these things if we want to stay out of jail. So, you know, it's a hard thing.
Yeah.
Now, try to battle this and take it along the road, you know, you need to get an education. Education starts right here. Are you coming in on a phone? I don't know, are you on an app or just a phone?
I'm on a phone.
Okay, because if you want an app, you'll be able to see my desktop. But on National Liberty Alliance, if you highlight Education Starts Here, okay, but one of the strongest courses you can take is Court Access in the Common Law course. So you click on that and you get into that course. It'll teach. It's a 90-hour course on due process, how things work in the court, and you know what's going on with the civil law versus the common law. But we have other courses also. We have the foundational study and the civics course, government by consent course, the militia course, so on and so forth. But if you're in a situation, but it's going to take time to be able to put this together and understand how this stuff works and how due process works and how to win. So I don't see you really winning this battle until you get educated. And education, you could get educated quickly, but it's not enough to really be able to articulate yourself and come in with, you know, a good position and defend yourself and come in with a lot. But they're not going to listen anyway because they're evil. And the more you fight, the more they want you. And the more and more they get vicious. So what I suggest to you, it's almost contradictory to what we're teaching, but you're stuck in a situation here. I would go get a lawyer and try to see how you could be best to be serving the least amount of time in jail. Once they see you complying, they may get a little lenient on you. But then you get studying. But on the other side of devolution, are you familiar with devolution?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, devolution is in play. On the other side of devolution, you'll get justice. And what I would do I would write yourself an affidavit, just the facts, nothing more than the facts. Don't get into the law, don't get into storytelling, don't go and get into all these different things, just the facts, clear and cut, less is more. Write an affidavit and then go to, let's see where this is at. I know we have it on the right side, but yeah, right here under today's issue, stuck in an abusive court. You can click on that, okay, read this information, put your affidavit in with us, and And whatever time you spend in jail, all of that was unlawful, and therefore you'll be compensated at some point in time on the other side of devolution. This is the beginning of kind of putting yourself in a position for that.
Okay, because I was a friend of mine told me about this, y'all, the come on Monday at 9 o'clock. My only concern I really have is the felony I have on my record, you know, and I'm trying to figure out what can I do to get rid of that because I did not commit no crime.
Well, that felony, which is unlawful, because look at, they didn't give you due process. Why didn't they give you due process? You can make this argument now that they're not going to comply to it, but ultimately at the end of the day, they'll have no choice. And that is, again, on the other side of devolution. You were tried in a chancery court, and you're still in a chancery court. It's under civil law, and they unlawfully applied that. So here is a major problem. And when everyone that's in jail realizes this, well, a lot of those people need to be set free anyway, but anybody that's in jail realizes this, even murderers and people who belong in there, they understand that they didn't have due process. All these cases have to be retried. I mean, how are they going to do all that? You know? That's going to be a serious problem because, look at it, if we're going to be on the floor and you're going to have remedy for every injury, there's going to be a remedy. And if you were unlawfully judged and put into jail in an unlawful court, well, you have a right to the due process. You have a right to the injury that was made upon you. And again, a lot of people that are in jail do not belong in jail. You know, ultimately, courts really are for the purpose of restitution. These juries should be having an eye on restitution, restoring the individual that was injured. And in your case, no one was injured to begin with. You were just executing your right of free travel, executing your right of having a weapon, all these things. Okay, all that will be overturned later on the other side. You'll be able to clean your record up. We'll start working on ways to do that once we get to the other side, and we'll teach people that process.
John?
Okay.
Yes.
So you say I guess it's due process?
Hang on. Yeah. John? Very good.
I would like to put in a little thing here. Ed, I don't think he caught Emil.
Yes.
The important thing that I hear is to document the case. And that's what affidavits do. So you can get up on the NLA website and there's sample affidavits up there. There's a form you can use. You need to document everything. And John mentioned that, but on the other side of devolution, those affidavits will be very important. They will prove your case, and then you'll be able to you know, denied. They'll be able to say, you'll be able to say, I was denied due process, and I think I should be released. And in common law, yeah, you would be. So I just want to emphasize, you need to go up and document what has happened so far. What happened when they pulled you over? What did they say to you? And what did you say to them? And what was the result? And when did you go to jail? And what did you not get to say? You need to say all of that.
You know, and I found out too, Bobby being disabled, that would help out too, because, you know, at the time when I, you know, this went on, I had a stroke and caused me to be disabled. And I just found out that me being disabled could help out with the court as well. And that's called
that's a whole other case.
That's why you
was
do
that again?
Need, now that's why you do need a lawyer right now to get you out of the situation as best that lawyer can, because you don't have the knowledge or the ability to really represent, take care of your own business, represent yourself. Let me tell you, and I try to drill this into people's minds, people who are not paying attention enough to really get the point that I'm trying to make. Look at, your heritage is in the law. That's who we are as a people. You know, the law that they have and the laws that they write, the civil laws, it bores you to tears reading through all that stuff, but it has nothing to do with the law. The law of the land, you know, common law is common sense. That's all it is common sense. It's built up upon maxims. Maxims are undeniable truths. For instance, water does not go uphill unless you have a pump. It doesn't go uphill. Okay, that's the nature of things. Well, that's basically what maxims are. So, but every individual, every child going to school, we need to educate our children properly. Every child should learn the common law. They should learn due process. They should learn how our political process works. They should learn how our judicial process works. They should be able, by the time they become adults, they should be able to walk into any court of law and take care of the legal business, whatever that might be. They should be able to defend themselves. They should be able to be a plaintiff to sue other individuals if that's a necessity. And they should be able to do it themselves. And if they can't do it, then they're missing out on a lot of their liberties and freedoms and their powers and their authorities and everything else. And then you'll end up sharing a third of whatever it is that you might go after. If you're a plaintiff going after suing somebody, you'll be given a third to some lawyer. Now, of course, there'll be no bar attorneys, because bar attorneys must go because they're unlawful, they're unconstitutional. The 13th Amendment demands that they have no power or position of power, and if they do try to take power or position of power, they lose their citizenship and the subject. Okay, they cannot operate within our government, although they are. Now, what I suggest to you and to everybody is to get educated, and let's get proper education into our schools. We'll be working heavily on that in the very near future. But right now, education starts right here on our tab. It's called Education Starts Here on the top of our website. Come down to Court Access in the Common Law, and you need to take that course, because that's what you need to understand things. But you're not going to be able to take that course to defend yourself, because there's not enough time in your case now. You're going to need a lawyer. So comply with them for the whole purpose of trying to get the least amount of jail time, maybe even out of it, because you just mentioned that you have a deficit, and a good lawyer could make that point and should be able to help you on that. Also, the court will see that you stopped your resistance. Right now, they're evil. They're coming out of you with a vengeance and a venom, because who the heck do you think you are to come into my court and think that you can do this, that? That's their attitude, you know. That's their attitude.
Okay.
So that lawyer and judge in Trump's case that was talking to another lawyer, and he was trying to get all these other lawyers to come into the court to become part of the process to hear what's going on and stuff. And the lawyer said to the judge, "Hey, there's no jury here. We can use those seats over there." And the judge turned and said to them, "You ain't putting nobody in my jury. It's not his jury. Who the heck does this guy think he is?" But that's their attitude. They believe that. They've gone to bar school, and they believe the lie. And that's why we're in trouble. And the people believe the lie. And that's why we've been enslaved. Because if more percentage of the people knew and understood the law, we wouldn't be where we're at right now. This would have been snuffed out a long time ago. But it's not the case. We're ignorant. We're not free. Because you can't be ignorant and free. It's an impossibility.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John.
Yeah, do what you got to do, though. Get yourself out of this situation and go for restitution at the end of this. How many days were you in jail?
I was in there for 42 days.
Okay, well, what do you think you should get a day? 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000? You know, what's your liberty worth? That's what I'd be going.
I've been looking into that. It will make me a millionaire because this information I was reading. I think it's about a minute while I was in there. So I'm gonna work on this here. Say again.
I'm looking at the clock. We only got a few minutes. We've got two other people. I'd like to give them a couple of minutes before we close down. But do what you got to do. If you want to talk some more, we'll see you next Monday. Right.
Okay, yeah, thank you all so much. Thank all of you all so much. Thank you.
Okay, get yourself educated. And be careful with online, I'll tell you, because I learned a lot of stuff online that I was starting to follow in the beginning when I was ignorant, just like anyone else. And then I started to do my research and studies and also the consequences of different things and who put this stuff together you know, and I started to realize, wow, people are being led astray, and these people are claiming victory, and they don't have victory. Believe me, they don't have victory. They say they do, but they don't. Okay?
Okay.
Maybe one or two here or there, occasionally it happens, but it is extremely rare. So don't believe the lies, you know. Anyway.
All right, thank you.
All right. Let's take our next caller. It's a wireless caller, 904 area code. What's your first name and your state? We've got only a couple of minutes.
Yeah, my name is George. I'm in Florida, and I'll be brief. On the subject of committees of safety, I'm hoping that someday you'll put a conference together and just invite everybody from all different people that are trying to do this thing, see if they can, you know, start talking to each other.
That's what the Monday Night Call is all about, trying to get the people to come here to get educated. And then maybe occasionally we can have special meetings, maybe once a month, to discuss issues. But we should discuss issues here, too. You know?
And there's a gentleman by the name of Pete Santilli that is on the Mike Lindell network. That he's been working very hard on putting committees of safety together. But I haven't been involved with it because I'm doing other things. But I just know he's doing it. So you might want to try to get in touch with him, Pete Santilli.
I'm familiar with his work. I'm familiar with his past. I know a lot about him.
Okay, great. So the other issue I wanted to mention, I kind of got sidetracked in my research, and I ran across something interesting. I think it's 1921. I'm kind of just finished driving, so I don't have it with me. But I ran across a law that was written in Congress where they were funding, looked like the predecessor to Child Protection Services. It's something to do with children and infants. Cleanliness, or that's what's the word. But anyway, so it has to do with putting this all together for infants and children, it states that the states have to develop their own codes and then submit them for approval so they can receive funding. But one of the things that's very stipulated in their code is that the Fed government dictates that they must put language in there that states that no agent or officer of their agency is allowed to remove children from the custody of parents without parents' permission. Not only that, but no state agency or agent or any of their employees are allowed to interfere with parental discipline. Okay, whatever parent decides is appropriate for discipline, that's very specifically stipulated in that law. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that law.
I'm familiar with the common law, and that's where we got to get back to the common law. I am familiar with some of their laws.
No.
You know, again, the thing.
I understand that. But my point is that a lot of people that are being bothered by Child Protection Services today, they could go back and look at this law and say, "Hey, wait a minute, you guys are at risk of losing." First of all, you could change the venue from a state court to a federal court. Okay, I'm guessing. I'm not a lawyer. I'm playing on TV, right? But
the federal courts don't have the authority to hear that. Their jurisdictions is very, very specific in the Constitution.
But
the states are free and independent. They need to do what they got to do. But the bottom line is the law of the land, and the law of the land is natural law. And God gave the children to the parents. Now, unless that child is in some kind of obvious danger, nobody should be able to say or do anything, okay? And they better be able to prove that. And forget their laws, because they don't apply to us. They don't apply to me. Although, of course, we have a problem. They do try to apply laws to us, and I do my battles with them on my personal level. But nevertheless, okay, if you're going to correct your child with a spanking, that's your business, okay? Abuse is a different story. There are people out there abusing their own children, and it's sad. And that does happen, and sometimes something has to happen there to take care of that problem. The problem, you know, when you have a child protective agency, which is a government agency, which is run by the state, We have to put very strong restrictions on that, and we have to be able to apply the common law to that. But the bottom line is, when they come and they take your children immediately when there's some kind of a complaint, and they got the littlest thing, and it's not even enough evidence to do anything, but they'll come and take your children, and it's a battle to get them back. They'll bring them into family court, and if there's more than one child, every child will get their own lawyer. You come in with your own lawyer. Both parents come in with their lawyer. It just goes on and on and on, and you've got lawyers just quarreling and arguing because they're out to win. They have no concern for the children, and it doesn't work. We have to revamp that entire system. Family court has got to go. It's an unlawful court. It's repugnant to who we are as a people. And we've got some ideas and thoughts about it. We could discuss that another time. We don't have the time right now. But that needs to be revamped. And we have to put, you know, I don't know that we really have to have child protective services. I think the sheriff is enough to be able to come out and see, well, if there really is a danger for a child in a particular household. And unfortunately, there are households with their own dangers. But they better, you know, they need some good evidence before they come in to try to remove a child. And then they have to bring it into a proper court, a court of law, where the people decide, not a judge. The people decide. And
well, yeah, but while you're going on, my point being that there's a law, that's a federal law right there that says that exactly what we're talking about. And I didn't know, and if you're familiar with the law, do you know if that law has been repealed or overwritten or anything? Huh?
What law? I don't know which law you're talking about. What federal law?
I was just telling you about this, a 1921 law.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with us. That's null and void to the people. They can't apply that to the people, and the federal government has no business in that part of the...
No. You're missing my point. My point is that the law states to the states that when they develop their procedures, their policies and procedures for their state agencies, that they have to write in their state agencies that they have no right to take children from the parents.
That's a given just under natural law, but the bottom line is the federal government has no right to dictate anything to the states. The states are free and independent. You go and look into the Bill of Rights, and it's the 10th Amendment. Okay,
You're not letting me make my point. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
I understand your point. The point that I'm trying to make to you is that the federal government can't make a law governing a state. They can't do that. Natural law makes that point already for you. And that's what
All right. I get you. Okay. All right, then. Thank you very much.
I'll read it. For others that are listening, the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And here's the problem. The states have lost their sovereignty. They lost their sovereignty back in the early 1900s with the 17th Amendment, which took away the power and the authority of the state to have the right of voting, through their Senate, because they no longer send their own senators, and that is a problem. So we have, let me see if I can read that real quick. Article 5, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Well, how is it that the people now elect, 17th Amendment gave the power and the authority to the people to elect their senators? Well, they already have their representation in Congress. What do they need senators for? The balance of power was broken. The state has a right to have a say in what the federal government does, and they no longer have that right because they don't have the right of suffrage. They don't have the right of vote in the Senate because they're not representing the state. They're representing their constituents, the people who already have their representation. They broke the balance of power in the Constitution, and it crippled all kinds of things. And I wrote a paper on this, and that's one of the issues we're going to be making in our paper that's going into the courts, the United States Supreme Court, with the demand the 17th Amendment's got to go, the 16th Amendment's got to go, the original 13th Amendment has to be brought back into play, and the 13th and 14th, as we know it, should be put together as one and become the 14th Amendment, and we need to get back to the common law. That's the solution. And, yeah. and people don't yeah. get that and don't do what has to be done to bring this back into power, their own power and their own authority, then we deserve the slavery we're living in.
Yeah, I was just looking to see if there was any way to use that statute to help people that are being bullied by Child Protection Services, but you're saying no. Okay.
Well, you All could right. look at if they have a law and you're on this side of devolution, believe me, I use their laws against them because they apply to them. Not
yeah,
to
that's, I mean, that's what I'm saying because I understand you've got the long-range view, and I absolutely agree with that, but at the same time, we also have to find short-term solutions for people who are about to lose their children. And so what,
if you have that knowledge, you can use that. I would agree with that. Look, I use their rules for them. I use their statutes for them.
Yeah.
Them has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. My point being that the very minimum, the state is at jeopardy of losing its funding if they're violating a core requirement of their funding. Okay. So anyway,
I agree, but on the long term is the point. Yeah, right. That is my long term.
Right. Right now we've got people that are suffering. We need short term solutions as well. Thank you so much.
On the long term, we got to get rid of Child Protective Services. The sheriff.
No question.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Time, so I only got a minute or two for the next person or two, so we got to close down. So, but we'll take a minute or two with let's see, area code 929. Is it? Looks like 929. It's hard to read if that's 9. 360 number. You got the mic.
Hello.
Yeah. What's your first name and your state?
Usman. New York City.
Okay. Only got a minute or so. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hey.
Bob. Hi. So, he was wondering, because he went to the IRS, he went to the website, and he wanted, like, because they asked for his information, like his name, and, like, he wanted to change, like, because his name is Usman Nyambele, and then on the website, he wanted to switch it, like, to make his last name his first name and to make his first name his last name. So basically, Nyambele Usman, but it wouldn't allow him.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be like,
I don't have any knowledge there, but maybe we could talk a little bit more if you want next week. It's too late to get into that conversation right now, but my knowledge is really, really minimum in this area.
Okay.
You know, come back on next Monday and we can talk about it. Just get in early enough to get onto the mic. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Last call. Looks like AZ. What's your, maybe you're Arizona. I don't know, but.
I am Arizona. This is Brandon Irish, John.
Okay, go right ahead.
Yeah, so anyhow, I've been doing some serious homework. And, you know, I wish I could have jumped in on that guy that was talking about the Child Protective Services, because I think the immediate solution is that, you know, people need to realize that the United States is actually a corporation, and all of the states that have been incorporated are all sub-corporations, and all of the cities and municipalities and all are sub-corporations of the United States. So what we need to do, you know, is basically to exit this whole corporate system is change our status to an American national. And there's a whole problem.
They're absolutely right in what you're saying, and they moved us into what's called corporatism. And that's not them, actually. So we're in corporatism, and we're very close for Iron Fist, very close to the Iron Fist to close, and it's over. And look at how much we're fighting just to try to get. We still don't know nothing about the attempted assassination of Trump. They told us nothing, absolutely
To me, no, it's all a circus show to tell you.
That's the power that these people have. They just don't care. They run the Justice Department. They got the FBI. They got the CIA. They got the presidents. They got the, well, they don't have the courts anymore, but there's still four in the court. Four of these crazies on the court.
They own Hollywood, and that's why we're watching a movie.
Everything. They got it all. The people better wake up and get educated and start doing something about it. But it's all corporatism, and it's about to be taken out. But the answer is not to become a nationalist and go through that whole process and jump through hoops. No, we do all of that is a fraud. Let's call it for what it is. We do know that they've incorporated everything right down to the counties and the towns. They've incorporated everything. We have to untie all that. Devolution is in play. National Liberty Alliance will be playing a major role in that issue. Unless someone else picks it up and they got it going, we'll focus our attention somewhere else. We have to work on a proper education for our children. You know, I'm going to work on some books on that. I know I spoke with Brent Allen Winters, for those who know Brent, and he's supposed to be working with me on that. I got to make a connection. I don't have the time right now, but after devolution is over, I'm going to put my focus there. We need to get an proper education for the children. Okay, and we have to deal with all these problems. And people need to come together and stop being islands. You know, we've got some people that have started committees of safety, and they're an island. No man is an island. We need to get together. One island has to be talking to another. Let's become a people. One county to another county, one state to a state. Let's agree where we can and find where we can't. You want to do it that way, and we want to do it this way. All that's fine. Let's do what we got to do. Let's take back this nation. Let's bring back justice into our courts. Let's bring back a proper education to our children. They've been demoralizing our children, and they've been making them look at they're wacko. They've created our children into wackos. Look what's going on with these college students. They don't even know whether they're male or female. A young child doesn't even know, you know, what bathroom to go into. They've confused them so much. This has got to stop, and only the people can do it. It's up to the people. So, anyway, brings us to the end of our program, and we'll see you next Monday, Lord willing. We have Bible studies on Wednesdays, 7:30, this room, anybody interested. But until next Monday, we'll see you then. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.